You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now it really gets interesting. Happy Monday, everyone, and welcome into a new episode and a new week here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Monday evening, the Rockets are just a little over 24 hours away from returning to the hardwood in their Round 2 series against the Golden State Warriors, the rematch of last year's Western Conference Finals that we've waited nearly a year for. Game 1 was a close one that went down to the wire, a 104-100 loss for the Rockets at Oracle Arena. If you want details on that, we had a full post-game recap with Matt Moore, senior NBA writer at the Action Network. You can find that at LockedOnRockets.com or wherever you listen to this program. So today's show on Monday, April 29th, we're not going to talk too much about the X's and O's of what happened on Monday night. We're going to be looking ahead to Tuesday's Game 2 and the remainder of the series. We will talk some about the tactical adjustments that Mike D'Antoni may make in the third and final segment of our usual three-part show. But to lead off, we're going to be discussing everyone's favorite subject, that being the officiating, because after what happened in Game 1, the repeated and flagrant violations, in my opinion, of the landing space rule by Klay Thompson and Draymond Green landing in effectively the area where Chris Paul and James Harden are allowed to be after releasing their three-pointers, supposed to be a flagrant under the NBA's new revised rules, and yet it's not even being called as a regular three-shot foul, let alone a flagrant. It certainly played a role in the Rockets shooting 14 of 47 overall on threes, and it also kept them off the free throw line because many of those certainly would have sent the Rockets to the line for three. Apparently, the officiating crew told Mike D'Antoni at the half that they estimated they had missed four of them, and of course, the implication would be that they would correct it in the second half. Unfortunately, that did not happen. And even aside from the landing space issues, the Rockets were shortchanged in other areas of the officiating as well. In the last two-minute report issued by the NBA on Monday afternoon, the league cited three incorrect calls in the final 2 minutes of the game. All went against the Rockets, of course. The two most impactful, Steph Curry in the scramble sequence with 5 seconds left and the Rockets trailing by three, trying to retain possession of the basketball and get one more shot to tie the game. He bumped Eric Gordon, sending him out of bounds. That was not called. The out of bounds was effectively ending the game, and then Chris Paul ejected for daring to be upset with the blown call. That should have been a foul, sending Eric Gordon to the line with a chance to cut the lead to one and fouling Steph Curry, who had 5 fouls out of the ballgame. But even more impactful than that was with a minute 10 left, Steph Curry bumped and checked James Harden out of bounds. It was clear live what happened. They didn't call it and actually ruled it a turnover because Harden went out of bounds after the bump. Not only would it have sent Harden to the line to cut the lead to one possession, but it also would have fouled Curry out of the game. And that was a big deal because what happened in the final minute? Curry ended up making the dagger three over Nene that proved to be the difference. If that sixth foul were whistled on Curry at the minute 10 mark, as the league said it should have been in the last two-minute report, then he would not even have been on the floor in the final minute to hit that dagger shot. So the officiating has definitely been a big topic of discussion nationally. It might have cost the Rockets the game. Now, I'm sure the Warriors can point to calls that were missed on the other end, and we can go back and forth about this all day. Certainly, I have a bias here in Houston. There are people out in California that may say different things. But what's really interesting to me, the key development between Sunday and Monday that I did not know at the time of our postgame show was what was leaked by The Athletic and Sam Amick, or more precisely, leaked to, which is going back to the Western Conference Finals last year. The Rockets, according to the league's internal officiating reports, were shortchanged 93 points in the Western Conference Finals against the Golden State Warriors, including 18 in Game 7. This is not a Houston practice. This is not the Rockets going through and saying these are the calls that we think we deserve. This is based on the league's internal officiating grading system, which is not released publicly. Effectively, think of it as the last two-minute report, but for the entire game. The teams have access to it. We as fans and media do not. And typically, it doesn't get released because the league doesn't want its officials under that kind of a microscope, that level of intense scrutiny. Well, clearly, the Rockets, by releasing it to Sam Amick and The Athletic, a great story, you can read it at theathletic.com. Certainly, they're going against the league's wishes, and they're doing it because at this point, after game one, they feel like they don't have a choice. And to those of us here in Houston that watched the Western Conference Finals last year, it shouldn't come as a shock. But what I think this tells you is the degree to which Daryl Morey and the Rockets front office is intensely frustrated by this and looking for a solution. And at this point, they're acknowledging that just hoping that through regular open dialogue and transparency that it's eventually going to resolve itself. The incident yesterday with the officials admitting to Mike D'Antoni at the half that they were missing this call, and then in the third quarter, not only did they not give the Rockets the call when Chris Paul was fouled in the three, but they actually teed up both CP and Mike D'Antoni for daring to call them out on it. That's how bad it was yesterday. So clearly, the normal mode of communication as far as open dialogue, it's not working. So what I'm going to do on today's show, we're going to look at both the key takeaways and also how the Rockets can fix this moving forward. Here off the top, though, I think it's important, before we get to fixing the problem, and hopefully it gets better in Game 2 on Tuesday night, what you have to do is understand it. And I think at this point, we need to understand as a Houston basketball community that this is not just a Scott Foster or Tony Brothers problem. Too often, we have simplified it to that. Now, that's not to say that those two don't have their own issues. For example, with Foster in particular, there definitely appears to be a vendetta against the Rockets, or at least against Chris Paul. That's still there. But with the release of intel to Sam Amick of the league's internal officiating grades, and that's, again, neutral. That's not a Houston perspective. That's the NBA grading each call of the game as it should have been as compared to what it was. With that showing, the Rockets were shortchanged by 93 points in the best of seven series a year ago, and in six of the seven games, all but game two, the Rockets were at an officiating disadvantage, according to the points metric. And I think we can certainly assume that with the fouls on three-point shots that were not granted on Sunday in game one, that's seven of eight playoff games between the Rockets and Warriors in which Houston has been on the short end of the officiating stick. That is not just a Scott Foster or Tony Brothers problem. That is systemic. That is something that is much broader. Rockets fans Sunday morning, when the officials were leaked and they saw Zach Sarba, Courtney Kirkland, a lot of us breathed a sigh of relief. Instead, it's become the hot topic of discussion and may have cost Houston the game, a crucial one because the Rockets need to win at least one on the road in this series, and that one was there for the taking. So moving forward, we need to stop looking at it just through the lens of, is it Scott Foster or is it Tony Brothers? Not saying that I want those two to officiate a Rockets game, but I also don't think we should oversimplify it into that's the problem. No, it's clearly much, much broader than that. And some of the biases may not be as transparent as, for example, the Scott Foster and Chris Paul one. Some of it may be subconscious, but regardless, the problem is a lot more broad than what some of us make it out to be. Now, in defense of the officials, one thing that should be pointed out, I don't believe this is anything conspiratorial. And quite frankly, if you believe it is, you probably should not be listening to this podcast. Because if you think there's some sort of directive from the NBA league office, look, Houston is not good enough to overcome that against the Golden State Warriors. They're just not. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, the Warriors are great on their own merits. If you think the NBA league office is interfering to that degree, there's no point in watching the games. I don't believe that because, well, first off, it's bad for business. The NBA's ratings have been down this postseason. It's not good for the league to have this degree of domination by one team. The ratings for game one of Golden State Houston were through the roof. You know why? Because that's the one team that could actually compete with Golden State. One of the reasons the NFL has so much success in terms of ratings, there is parity. From year to year, there's a lot of changes, although the New England Patriots, but that's not the same as the dynamic that the chokehold that the Warriors have had, especially in the KD era, on the entire NBA. So I don't think it's good for business for the Warriors to win this easy. And I also don't think it's realistic to think that there's some sort of directive, because look, if the league office were to hypothetically be telling its officials that, hey, we want to give Golden State the benefit of the doubt, or we want to screw over Houston, you know how many people would be in the loop between the league office, all of the officials? Because as mentioned, it's not just Scott Foster and Tony Brothers. There's lots of different officials. You're looking at probably hundreds of people in the loop. If even one of them, and everyone has cell phones on them, were to make a recording, take a picture, screenshot, whatever it may be, this thing would blow up and the league's image would be tarnished forever. It would ruin the credibility of the NBA. I think that's a real reach. I'm harsh on officials, but I don't think that this is anything conspiratorial to where the league is looking to reward the Warriors or to punish the Rockets. That would be far, far too easy to leak at some point, go public, and when that does, that's awful for the NBA's business. So no, I don't believe that that's what's going on. I think what you have is a few rogue officials, and it's more than just Scott Foster and Tony Brothers, that either known or perhaps subconsciously have certain biases against the Rockets, and those come out once the Rockets are in a high leverage situation against a team as good as Golden State. Another thing we should point out, it's not like these issues just crop up when the Rockets play the Warriors. There were definitely some instances. I can think back to the first quarter of game one against the Jazz, where Harden was fouled on a three. They got in his landing space and it was not granted. It's just against other teams, the Rockets have such a huge gap in terms of the talent that they're able to win most of the games anyway, certainly the series. And then if you win the game, the series, then at the end of the day, everybody looks the other way, shrugs their shoulders and says, whatever, the better team, the deserving team won. In this case, because Golden State is so good, the Rockets aren't able to overcome it like they could against the Utah Jazz or the Minnesota Timberwolves in the playoffs a year ago. And thus, when you wonder if it had an impact on the team that won and whether the deserving team ended up with the most points on the scoreboard, then it becomes in greater focus. So to me, I also don't think it's necessarily that the officials are trying to reward the Warriors. I think some of this has been seen in other rounds as well. We just don't make a huge deal of it because the Rockets typically win the games. Against the Warriors, the gap is close enough to where these things can have a greater impact on the final result and who ends up winning. And it goes back to, again, the problem, it's a lot broader than Scott Foster and Tony Brothers. This is something that's systemic. It's happened with a number of different officiating crews. And one thing that was leaked in the Sam Amick story, which you know was sourced from the Rockets, was the idea that Houston prefers less experienced officials because Houston's research has shown that those are more likely to enforce the rules, such as in game one, the closeout on the threes. And by the way, the closeout on the threes ending up in the shooter's landing space, according to the NBA's internal officiating reports, the 0 of 27 stretch that is referenced so much in game seven last year, at least two of those 27 featured fouls that would have sent the Rockets to the line for 6 points. So it's not just game one. This happened the most recent playoff game between the Rockets and Warriors as well. But at this point, it to me seems like an issue of ego. Maybe it's subconscious, but my guess is that the more veteran officials, which Zach Zarba, Courtney Kirkland, they definitely are. The Rockets are definitely on the edge of a lot of boundaries, and James Harden, Chris Paul, you know they try and get to the line. I could see these guys, whether it be known or subconscious, trying to not reward a team that they view as foul hunting or however they want to explain it. Problem is, it's the rule. Even if you see them as hunting out that contact, look, the defender cannot land in that space. It is incredibly well defined. Not only is it well defined, it's a flagrant. That's the downside. That's where the problem actually originates. In terms of how do you fix it, that's a little more complicated, and we'll talk about that momentarily in segment two. For now, though, I do want to remind you guys that to get this show each and every day, please subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya Podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Now, as we continue our way through our three-part show on this Monday, April 29th, welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. We're looking ahead on this Monday to Tuesday night's Game 2 at Oracle Arena. It's a big one for the Rockets because to avoid falling into an 0-2 hole, I know they at that point would not have lost a home game. But number one, at some point you're going to need to win at least one game on the road to win at Oracle Arena. And then beyond that, you fall down 0-2. You need to win four times out of five against the most talented team in NBA history, in my opinion. And that's a really tall order. So the Rockets, they have a lot at stake tomorrow night, and hopefully they're able to come through. We'll talk about some X's and O's adjustments they might make in the third and final segment coming up. But our first two segments, we've been discussing the topic of the day in NBA circles, which is the officiating, because not only were the Rockets on the short end of the stick in Game 1, we talked about that a lot in our Sunday evening post-game recap with Matt Moore. Clearly, the Warriors were landing in the space of Chris Paul and James Harden on their three-point attempts on multiple occasions throughout the game. I counted seven in total. If fouled in all, it would have sent the Rockets to the line 21 times, but even if you get just four or five of those, then you're getting 12 to 15 extra free throw attempts, and that could completely change the game. A result that, despite having so many things not go their way, the Rockets only lost by 4 points, which of course is indicative of the talent level of the Houston team and the fact that, yes, they do have a chance. So that's one reason why we're talking about the officiating, and another is the Athletic story last night from Sam Amick, which, sourcing information obtained from Houston, indicates that the Rockets, it's not just this series, they were shortchanged, according to the league's own internal officiating grades, by 93 points in the Western Conference Finals a year ago between the Rockets and the Warriors, including by 18 in Game 7. In six of the seven games in that series, the Warriors ended up with more points than they deserved based on the league's view of the calls. And I think, given the landing space issues in Game 1, we can safely say at this point that it's 7 of 8. In segment one, we looked into the problem in and of itself, which to me is often either made too much of. Some say that it's conspiracy. That's not realistic. It also diminishes the effect of your criticism if it's not realistic. If you just say the whole thing is a conspiracy, then people are going to roll your eyes and not take you seriously. I also don't understand why you're even watching the games if you truly believe that the league office is ordering or directing this. You need to have your critiques be reasonable if you want the league to be able to adjust and take action. That's what the Rockets are trying to do. You also need to understand that the problem is a lot broader than just one or two officials. It's not just a Scott Foster or Tony Brothers thing. Much different crews, including Zach Sarba and Courtney Kirkland on Sunday, are having many of the same issues. So to me, it's a bias that's certainly there. Number one, I don't think it's conspiratorial. It may not even be a conscious bias on behalf of some of these guys, but to some degree, it's there. The question is, how do the Rockets fix it moving forward in this series? And if there's one thing that you can question the Rockets about, it's why now? Why did they wait until after Game 1 to release this information from last year's Western Conference Finals? Should they have released it before the series to put the spotlight on the officiating and perhaps they get a friendlier whistle in Game 1? I don't know, but to me, that's at least a fair argument. I get why they didn't release it last summer, because even if it was true, once the series is over, it's done. There's no action, and it's going to fade from everyone's stream of consciousness by certainly the next postseason, but even the next regular season. If the Rockets had released that last June, then it would not make a big difference. They released it because they are trying to get a result. They are trying to pressure the officials into doing a better job that favors the Rockets, perhaps not even favor them, just get a certain balance that has been lacking over the last eight playoff games, or seven of the eight, between the Rockets and the Warriors. So that's why they released it after Game 1. You can second guess whether they should have done it before the series, but it might not have worked. It's a fine line, because one reason the Rockets didn't release it publicly, I'm sure behind closed doors they did. I'm sure they've discuss this with the league office. It's just many officials. Scott Foster might be an exception, but they promote dialogue. They want an open discussion. And I'm sure the Rockets behind the scenes have been trying to do this for a while. And certainly once they learn the matchup on Friday night, they'd be playing the Warriors again. So I'm sure they have tried it behind closed doors. It's just for whatever reason, that approach is not working. So to me, that's why the Rockets released the receipts, so to speak, in this Sam Amick story with The Athletic. The private route was not working, so now they're trying to exert public pressure. Will it work? We'll find out in Tuesday's Game 2, but to me, that's why the Rockets waited until after this game. They were trying to be nice. They were trying to do it through other means, and as far as would it have made a difference, you're fair to wonder, but I also don't know that we can say conclusively that it would have. That's just, to me, the talking point. That's the debate. we heard from Mark Cuban, who responded to Daryl Morey on Twitter Monday morning, that the only way to deal with the issue, and of course he's done it throughout his career, going back to the 2005 playoffs against the Rockets when he called out Yao Ming for what he saw as moving screens, and then from that point on the officials dramatically changed how they policed that series. Cuban told Morey to take the fine, referring to the organization, that the only way to get the league to not brush it off internally is to make a public spectacle on it. You can see Cuban's full comments on his Twitter page, at @mcuban. To me, this is what the Rockets are trying to do now, and that's what's going to be under scrutiny in Game 2. We'll see who the officials are, but at this point, the names of the officials aren't even that important anymore because this keeps happening. To me, Game 2 is going to be massive, not just from the standpoint that the Rockets need to win the game, of course they do, but if this doesn't work, I don't know what the Rockets can do. Now, maybe when they go home, they get a friendlier whistle. That happens sometimes, but the Rockets are going to have to win a game at Oracle Arena this series no matter what. I guess the good news is that you make a couple more shots, and even with the officiating, they could have won Game 1. So perhaps not all hope is lost, but if you want to get a fair whistle, if it doesn't happen in Game 2 in that building, it's going to be tough to see how Houston can change it. And that's why I'm very nervous about this game. This was really, as I can see it, the last card that the Rockets had to play. They've called them out publicly. They've done it at press conferences. Mike D'Antoni said after the game that the crew acknowledged 4 missed calls on threes in the first half alone. James Harden said all he wants is a fair whistle. They did what they can do in terms of public pressure. Now they're releasing the receipts, the data from the league's own internal grading system. This is not Houston saying, we think these should have been calls. This is the league's independent judgment that the Rockets were shortchanged relative to the calls the Warriors got by 93 points in last year's Western Conference Finals, including by 18 at home in Game 7. This is a big deal, but it's also the last card that the Rockets had to play. Will it work? That's what we'll find out tomorrow night, but at least there's hope. They didn't play this before Game 1, and there is history, going back to Mark Cuban, but plenty of others, of this having an effect. Keep your fingers crossed, and we'll see what happens at 9:30 p.m. Houston time on Tuesday night in Game 2. The last thing I will say in terms of fixing the problem, hopefully this does it, but if it does, or if the Rockets win the game, aside from the officiating, if we're in a better mood on Wednesday for various reasons, probably because the Rockets won, don't ease up on them. That is the takeaway, and I will say this before Game 2 happens. If the Rockets get those calls in Game 2 when Klay Thompson is in James Harden's landing space, it doesn't make up for Game 1. They're just doing their job as officials, which they shockingly did not do in Game 1. So if the Rockets go in there and win Game 2 and they get some calls they did in Game 1, don't think that, oh, this is fixed, la-di-da, and we can just move on. No, if the Rockets get these calls in Game 2, it's specifically because of the outrage, because of the pressure, the fans, the customers of the NBA, the Rockets showing the receipts. That is what would make the difference if this gets fixed in Game 2. Number one, if they start calling those, it's not like it undoes Game 1. You've already perhaps cost the Rockets a game. The damage has already been done. So no, it wouldn't equal out or balance Game 1 just because they do their jobs. No, at this point, the Rockets have been shortchanged. So no, you shouldn't forget about it. And secondly, if it does go Houston's way, then you know what? The pressure was a positive difference in terms of the whistle that you got. So you need to keep it up. And then hopefully going into the weekend, Game 3 on Saturday at Toyota Center and Game 4 on Monday night, that's an opportunity for the Houston crowd to make a big difference, just as the Golden State crowd, which stunning lack of self-awareness, chanting ref, you suck, and all that stuff amidst all the calls that they were getting in Game 1. Regardless, the crowd made an impact. Hopefully the Rockets can do the same this weekend. So to sum up my thoughts on the officiating, we'll see in Game 2. It's less about what officials draw the game, more about just do they respond to what we have seen in Game 1 and what is now a very public spectacle. If they don't, then yeah, it's a bad sign because the Rockets have played the last card that they really have to play, and the most imposing one, releasing the league's internal data, which they don't typically want out for a reason. Adam Silver is definitely not pleased with this getting out in the public discourse, but the Rockets feel like they have no choice. We'll see if it gets the results they want. If it doesn't, then yeah, it sucks. And if it does, then great. It should definitely give the Rockets a better chance to win the game, although we'll never say for sure in that building against a team that talented, but at least give the Rockets a better shot. But even if that's what happens, and even if they win the game, you cannot let up. It doesn't balance out game one. And certainly part of it, the Golden State crowd milked some of it. Well, the Houston crowd starting this weekend can do the same thing. So to me, in terms of fixing the problem, hopefully this makes progress. We'll see in game two. But regardless of the end result, whether it gets you what you want or if it doesn't, don't forget about it this weekend. Bring that same energy when the series shifts back to Houston for game three and game four. Final thoughts on this Monday evening as we look back on game one, the officiating miscues, but also turn the page to game two and potential adjustments the Rockets can make for Tuesday night's game. This is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. And I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. We spent the first two segments largely discussing the officiating gaffes and what is now a very public controversy. Here in the third and final segment, we'll discuss what the Rockets can do aside from the officiating. They did practice on Monday. They are expecting Austin Rivers back after he missed game one with a bout of the stomach flu. He should be back in game two. That will definitely help. So here in this third and final segment, we'll talk non-officiating things aside from those very frustrating issues. What can the Rockets control themselves to turn what was a 4-point loss in game one into a win in game two to tie the series going back to Houston and take home court advantage? Austin Rivers back will definitely help some. He's another defender for Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, the quick twitch variety on the perimeter. You need speed, you need IQ, not just on the ball, but also away from the ball to fight through screens. Rivers can provide a lot of different defensive dynamics and in terms of minutes. Certainly, he can take the 7 minutes that went to Gerald Green. He was a minus 16. That was a problem. We covered that on Sunday night's postgame show with Matt Moore. That's an easy seven. Beyond that, 21 minutes apiece to Iman Shumpert and Daniel House. Shumpert didn't even play in round one. You could see Rivers eating into one or both of those. You could also see Rivers eating into the 14 minutes that went to Nene, and perhaps the Rockets just go smaller because there's another smaller body that they trust in the form of Austin Rivers. Really, other than maybe replacing Gerald Green, I don't know that Mike D'Antoni is going to go into game two with a concrete plan. Some of it, he's going to throw out different combinations. He's going to see what works, what doesn't, and then at that point, that'll make the adjustment for whose minutes that Rivers gets. I think it's pretty clear that Shumpert, who played at 21 minutes, the most of any Rockets reserve in game one, despite the fact they didn't play very much at all in the rotation in round one against Utah, it's pretty clear the Rockets think that he is a good play against Golden State for this matchup. Mike D'Antoni said before the game, when asked by Matt Thomas in his pregame radio interview about the impacts of the Rivers injury, and he said, yeah, Shumpert will play more, but Shumpert was going to play anyway. So it seems pretty clear between the overall minutes and then Mike D'Antoni's quotes that no, it's not just about the Rivers' absence. Shumpert is going to play. They feel they need his length, his defense, his IQ. Overall, they just think he is a good matchup. He's also a pretty good screen setter offensively against the Golden State Warriors. So Rivers will play. He'll provide them more depth. He'll give them more flexibility in terms of their lineups. Will that make the difference? It might. You could definitely argue that Austin Rivers could have made a 5-point difference in game one, and that's really all you would have needed. Beyond that, certainly the Rockets need to make more shots. They were 14 of 47 behind the 3-point arc in game one, and many of those were wide open. They started 2 of 18, and so many, especially in the first quarter, when the Rockets were minus 9, were wide open looks that just misfired. I know the Rockets had looks later in the game and chances to get back in it and ultimately win, but look, the Rockets outscored the Warriors over the final three periods of the game. You can chalk it up to the first period when they were minus 9. That definitely had a pretty bad impact on the final result. So if they make more open looks, and that goes up and down the roster, even though Eric Gordon ended up scoring 27 on better than 50% shooting, he was ice cold early on. James Harden made just 4 of his 16 threes, although if he were allowed to land on his threes, he would definitely have a higher percentage, in my opinion, or at least could. So they need to make more shots. James Harden, in terms of his adjustments, the floater, was that really there for him yesterday? He did make a mid-range shot in the fourth quarter at a key spot, so maybe we see more, if Harden doesn't trust the floater, more the 14-15 foot just pull-up rather than going all the way to the 8-10 foot range with the floater. If that is off, which it's largely been off the entire playoffs, just in round one, we wondered, is it because of Rudy Gobert's presence as a shot blocker? Now, at this point, the Warriors don't have that kind of shot-blocking presence, but it still seems off, so maybe Harden looks at a few more mid-ranges instead of the floater. That could be an adjustment. And as far as his threes, overall, Harden and everyone need to make more, but beyond that, and beyond the officiating, which we discussed in the first couple of segments, I'm not really sure what the adjustment is. Quite frankly, it goes without saying, they need to make more shots. Chris Paul, perhaps he looks to be a bit more aggressive. He shot just 9 times in game one, but he had 17 points, made over 50% of his shots and 3 of his 6 from behind the three-point arc. So perhaps he can be a little more aggressive. But in general, he was often the initiator, as Matt Moore explained in our post-game show, and it just led, based on how the Warriors were covering it, to more looks, especially going towards the rim for James Harden or Eric Gordon. Now, CP3 could be a smidge more aggressive, but I don't think it'll be just a radical change from game one. To me, beyond the obvious, the rotations, the return of Austin Rivers, needing to make more of your open shots, to me, the far and away biggest thing the Rockets need to do in game two that they didn't in game one is get Clint Capela involved. I don't believe that his struggles, 4 points, 6 rebounds, minus 17 in 27 minutes, were just because of the virus, the upper respiratory infection that he was dealing with against the Utah Jazz. I'm not going to say that that was a non-factor, but going back to last year's Western Conference Finals, there was a big split between Clint Capela at home and Clint Capela on the road at Oracle Arena. To me, this became a bad Capela game early on, and perhaps they can play smaller. Down the stretch, they played Nene, which, number one, they felt they needed a rebounding presence, but the fact they had to turn to a 36-year-old Nene over Capela, that said a lot about how poor Clint was in that game. And of course, it ended up with Steph Curry hitting the biggest shot of the game, a 3 in the final minute to put the Warriors up 5, because Nene got switched onto Curry and left on an island. The Rockets should have helped, but even if they helped, there's no easy answer because somebody else is going to get an open shot, a mismatch somewhere. Point is, you'd ideally not be playing a 36-year-old Nene with the Warriors able to hunt that switch, but the Rockets felt like they didn't have a choice with Clint Capela playing so poorly. Perhaps if Austin Rivers is back, you can play smaller, and then if that's the case, then you have a different area to turn to. But considering the Rockets were minus 12 on the glass, I'm not sure going that much smaller is going to help you in an area where you were also deficient in game one. The bottom line, as I see it, Clint Capela just needs to play better. And while some of it could be the virus, some of the physical things that he has been dealing with, I saw too much of a split in his performances in last year's Western Conference Finals to think that it's all that. Yes, the death lineup with Draymond at the 5, it presents some unique challenges, but we have seen Clint thrive against those in Houston. And in the regular season, he had 29 and 21 against the Warriors in that win at Oracle Arena back in January. That was a regular season game, but it was at Oracle if you want some hope. We have seen him, even against the death lineup with Draymond at the 5, it's a bit easier if it's Kevon Looney off the bench, but we have seen Clint Capela do it. To me, it's a confidence issue. Perhaps some of it's physical, but I think some of it is confidence too. And the best way, in my opinion, try and get him some good early results, be it a lob, be it, I don't say dump it on the low block, because clearly that's not Clint's skill set. But if he can just see the ball go through the bucket a couple of times, get him a big shot, a rejection on one end, a couple of big rebounds. He needs to see something go right. Because to me, against that lineup in that gym, this has happened too many times, going back to last year's Western Conference Finals, that he gets off to a slow start and eventually he slumps his shoulders and it feels like, here we go again. And keep in mind, this is a guy who's just in his mid-20s. He's still young, even though it's year 5. It's really only his 3rd year as a regular contributor, as a starter, and really his 1st year playing over 30 minutes per game. He's still young. There's still a maturation process. Look how far James Harden has come in the last 2 postseasons since the 2017 playoffs against the Spurs. There's not just physical, but emotional maturity that comes with time. And the Rockets, as far as what they can do, certainly they need to say the right things to Clint Capela at practice, make sure that he is engaged, that he is fully confident in what he is doing. But beyond that, I think the best thing that the Rockets can do early in the game, get him involved. Because the fact is, the Rockets only lost by 4 points, even with Clint Capela, their starting center, the third member of their big three, making over $15 million a year, giving them almost nothing, minus 17 in 27 minutes. If you get the same production up and down the roster that you got in game one, with a healthy Austin Rivers, and with Clint Capela playing like the borderline all-star that he has been that level for most of this season, if you get that in game two, even if the Warriors shoot a little bit better and cut down the turnovers, yeah, they had 20 turnovers, they were a little lax, although the Rockets forced a lot of those. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they missed 10 of their 15 threes. Even if they're hotter, if you get a better Clint Capela, if you get Austin Rivers back and you get a few more officiating breaks, you can offset that and you can still win, even in that building. That's the case for optimism, that despite everything that went wrong in game one, and no, the Warriors didn't play perfect, they can tighten their handle, they might make a few more threes, etc., etc., Houston is good enough that they only lost by 4 despite so many things going wrong. Capela, the officiating, no Rivers, we can go up and down the lineup in terms of guys that could have played better. And Mike D'Antoni's going to be working with that at practice today. The bottom line is Houston is close. And if Capella can step up to the guy he was in the closeout game 5 against Utah and the guy that he was in the regular season before the illness, the virus, the respiratory infection, whatever you want to call it, then to me, the Rockets are in a really good place entering game 2. Anyway, with that, we'll wrap up our Monday show on this April 29th. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in. And if you want more content before our next show, which of course will be breaking down Tuesday night's game 2, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond Twitter, we have a Facebook account at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website at LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All those are ways you can access prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being, please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, beyond just listening, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe to the show, you can do so on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car, you can get our most recent episode just by telling your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. And beyond listening and subscribing, if you'd be kind enough to leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice, that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers. And even if you can't advertise yourself with your positive review, with your subscription, that's how we can look attractive to other advertisers and keep the business model rolling as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So with those plugs complete, this is where we will break things on this Monday, April 29th. As always, thanks so much for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast discussion of everything Houston Rockets basketball.